see now is that, what I've been developing here is not only the properties that UG has that allows one to tensor its representations together, but we've also seen some properties that those tensor products have themselves. So now I'll write down the definition of a certain type of category, which will be the category of representations. Any of the algebra will have the category of representations that satisfies the properties of this category. And we'll see in a way that it's sort of dual to this concept of the bi-algebra. So, so we introduced this concept of a monoidal category. And that is a category, category C. Together with a bifunctor from C cross C to C, satisfying the following properties. So the first property is that there is a family of natural isomorphisms phi u v w for all u v w and c with the following property, and so this will correspond to the phis will give us the identification of these two spaces, or more specifically, phi will give us an isomorphism between this parenthesization of three modules and this parenthesization. So the point that I want to emphasize, though, is where here we had an identification, all we're going to be requiring is an isomorphism. So there exists natural isomorphisms phi, which carry U tensor V tensor W isomorphically to U tensor V tensor W.
So you forgot to name the bifunctor tensor.
Ah.
So therefore,
yes.
Tensor is not yet well defined.
A bifunctor tensor. So that's correct, thank you. And it has to satisfy the following property. So coherence property. So I'm gonna write a fourfold tensor product, and U, V, W, Z, and parenthesized in this way. And right off the top, one sees that there are two ways that one could rewrite this. So one could rewrite what's inside using the phis and move the inner parentheses to the right, or one can treat U tensor V as being an object, which we're allowed to because we have this bifunctor from C cross C to C. So given any two objects, we can treat their tensor product as an object. And so since we have this family of isomorphisms, we also have a way of moving the outer parentheses to the right. So there's two maps that we could write down here. So let me go, going to the right, I will move the inner parentheses. So that's the isomorphism phi u v w, and that takes us to u tensor v tensor w tensor z. And then this way I will move the outer parentheses to the right. So that is the morphism phi u tensor v comma w comma z. And that, and now let me drop the tensor because it's getting a little cumbersome. So let me write this as uv times wz. And now I'll keep going, applying the morphisms that I can. So at this point, I can move these parentheses to the right. And so that corresponds to applying the morphism u v comma wz. And we get to u v wz. And on this side, we could move the outer parentheses to the right. So that corresponds to taking phi of u comma vw comma z, and we go to u vw z, and then finally we have a morphism this way. And the point is that this diagram has to commute. And so this is obviously, for obvious reasons, called the pentagon. And we're imposing this pentagon condition for all quadruples of objects UV, WZ. So
basically you're saying that you want the two ways to go from the all to the left parenthetization of tensor products to the all to the right parenthetizations to be the same.
That's right.
So that it actually makes sense to identify the two. The two ways of identifying them are the same.
Yeah. So in other words, we're not identifying this with this, for example, but we're identifying this path with this path. This and this are isomorphic, but not identified. However, the maps are identified.
Okay, but there are, I really wanted to say,
yeah.
They are isomorphic canonically. There is a
yes.
Single way to go from one to the other, because the two paths are the same.
That's right. So we impose the condition that you just said for any four objects, but it is a theorem that having done so for any four objects, the corresponding statement follows for any n objects. So for any n objects that you could write down in a particular order, any two parenthesizations of those are canonically isomorphic to each other. That is a theorem, which I won't prove, but it does follow from this condition. Well, this condition, together with the second condition, which is a more trivial one, there exists an identity object in C such that for all u in C, there exist natural isomorphisms, rho u and lambda u, dealing with the following trivial points, so u tensor 1, g should be isomorphic to U, and one tensor U should be isomorphic to U. So we have these natural isomorphisms, and there are some coherence requirements that come with it. Namely, so these maps have to be coherent with the reassociation maps. So specifically, U tensor 1 tensor V maps to U tensor V. So via 1 tensor lambda V. This can be reassociated to U tensor 1 tensor V. So this is via some association phi. And this in turn can be mapped here with rho U tensor of the identity. And we need this diagram to commute for all U's and V's. So this is the idea of a monoidal category. And the point that I mentioned a minute ago is the following theorem.
So can I interrupt you briefly? I don't know.
Please.
Just briefly. I don't know if people are aware of it, but you know, the simplest example of a monoidal category is so pathetic that it's worth mentioning. It's pathetic but non-trivial, so it's worth mentioning. So sets with times, okay, so X and Y's are sets, the tensor product is just times, okay? And it's, well, strictly speaking, X times Y is not equal, times Z is not equal to X times Y times Z. We're so used to saying it for sets that we never think about it, but strictly speaking, they're not equal, right? This is a set of ordered pairs in which the left element is itself an ordered pair. This is a set of ordered pairs in which the right element is an ordered pair. However, they're not equal. Instead, there is a canonical identification of them. And this is some map phi x, y, z. And had it not been the case that when you identify x times y times, I guess, w times x times y times z, parenthesized this way, with w times x times y times z, parenthesized the other way. So there are two ways to identify this with that, either by going in two steps in between or with one step in between. Essentially, just copy this diagram. I'm just not bothering to copy. Had it not been the case that this is commutative, math would have looked completely differently, right? We would never be able to talk about products of topological spaces. I don't know. Tikhonov's theorem would be a completely different matter. Or in general, products of sets would be a completely different matter. So the fact that we have this commutativity in set theory is already noteworthy, but it's so trivial that nobody ever notes it. And I guess part of what monoidal categories force you to do is to note it and occasionally find examples in which this is still true, but not so trivially. So, sorry, Peter, I hope you're not mad at me.
Oh, yeah, just curious. Okay, thank you. So the McLane's theorem that I was mentioning is that the same canonical identification for isomorphism exists even when you take an object as opposed to just one. So, all right. Now I want to layer more on top of this. And compare, so where I'm headed next is we want to know whether there is any relation that we can write down between U tensor V and V tensor U. So again, this is assuming we're in some monoidal category. And in general, there isn't. But if we are in the context where we have a bi-algebra and we look at its representations, its category of representations, then there may be. And so I will answer that first by putting an extra condition on a bi-algebra, which I'll write down in a minute, which will give us a handle on this question. So, definition, bi-algebra A, or a bi-algebra A is co-commutative if the obvious thing holds, namely delta op, which I define as delta composed with the flip operation, so where sigma flips components, and I say the bi-algebra A is co-commutative if delta op is equal to delta. But then, in general, this will be too restrictive, and so I'll have a second definition which is a little less restrictive, and I'll say a bi-algebra A is almost co-commutative if if there exists some element R in the twofold tensor product of A, which is invertible, such that the following. Specifically, delta op applied to any object element A will be the conjugation of delta by R. So up to this conjugation, the coproduct is co-commutative. So this is for all A. Or an equivalent way to write this, obviously, is that delta of A times R is R delta A. And the obvious example is, well, U of G before, we saw that delta of G is G tensor 1 plus 1 tensor G. That is, in fact, strictly co-commutative. As you can, that's obviously symmetric, but it's also almost co-commutative with R equals 1.
So No.
There is no the one subject.
This is true for this particular A. But I don't know that it's necessarily true that well, we're talking about an algebra with an identity.
I think you're asking about the trivial direction. It is true that commutative implies almost co-commutative.
Well, he was saying there may not be an identity. It requires, was that what you were saying?
No, but an identity was assumed. So.
Yeah, that's what, yeah. So an identity is assumed, so commutative doesn't like co-commutative.
So why do you emphasize this particular purpose of which is almost
oh, because I'm going to pick up on it later. If that's not. It's less supposed to be complicated. Okay, so. So now I want to come back to the category of representations of A, and I will consider this question again. And I will assume that A is almost co-commutative, and I will see what we can say about these two different tensor products. So A is almost co-commutative, and R is its flip map, if you like, or its specific element. And we let U and V be elements of rep A. Then let me compare two things. So let me write pi UV of A for so pi denotes the representation of this algebra A on the tensor product U tensor V. And I didn't write it out with a pi before, I just had it as implicit. But I want to write it out explicitly now so that we keep track of what's going on. So pi UV of A was or will be the following, pi u tensor pi v applied to delta of a applied to little u tensor little v. So I'm basically defining here, given a bi-algebra A, what the action of A on a tensor power, tensor product is. Thus, in effect, giving the first step to showing that its category of representations is monoidal. But this is how we will define the action of A on a tensor product. Now let's consider what happens if we write pi VU of A now acting on the flipped tensor product. So by definition, this will be pi v tensor pi u delta a acting on v tensor u. And now I will expand this delta a out. So I will write delta a in the following way, summation A1 tensor A2, where really I should put an index I here and here, and I'm summing over the I's, but I won't because I'm lazy, just to keep it a little simple. So I'll write the co-product in that form. Thank you. So from here, this is equal to the sum of A1 tensor A2 acting on B tensor U, which is to say the sum of A1 V tensor A2 U. And now I will rewrite this as a sum, and I'll flip the terms at the cost of writing a sigma in front. So this is sigma of A2 U tensor A1 V. Now I'll pull the sigma out, and I will get a sum of A2 tensor A1 acting on U tensor U. And now what we have here is just, so this part here is just pi U tensor pi V of delta op A. So delta op because the A2 and A1 are flipped, and pi U tensor pi V because it's acting on U tensor V of U tensor V. And finally, I'll write this as pi U tensor pi V delta of A. And I'll pull out another copy of sigma. So I get sigma of V tensor U. And so now I will compare this to this. So in each case, I've got something acting on V tensor U. And we can conclude from this that pi VU of A is equal to sigma composed with pi U tensor pi V delta op A composed with sigma. Or equivalently, and it will be more useful for my purposes, I will flip the sigma over to the other side. So if this is something that follows by how I define the tensor product, or the action of A on a tensor product. I've just defined it this way, and going from here to here, I've just churned equations. I haven't come up with anything new. This is something that must follow from how I define the action of A on the tensor product.
Okay. How did you move this thing to the other side? How did you move this thing to the other side? Should we do
the other side of the other side, it should be.
Yeah.
It should be the other side of the other side.
Let's consider the following diagram. So let's start with U tensor V. So these are modules. We'll go under R to U tensor V because R is within A tensor A, so it acts on each of the pieces and you just end up in U tensor V. And then we will flip to V tensor U. Or alternatively, we will apply pi UV A and go down to U tensor V and then go through the same process. And then lastly here, we will come down via pi VU of A. And then we have a final map in the middle, which, from what we just derived, the map from here to here is pi u tensor pi v acting on delta op of a. And from what we just wrote down, the right side square commutes. And this square commutes just because of the defining property of almost commutative. So that's just this equation here. So both of these squares now commute. So the whole thing commutes. And so what we have as a result is if we define duv to be the following morphism from u tensor v to v tensor u, which is just given by composing R with sigma. In other words, buv is defined to be sigma composed with R. Then from this diagram here and the fact that it commutes, we've just shown that this buv is an intertwining operator between u tensor v and v tensor u. So from the diagram, buv intertwines u tensor v and v tensor u. Or to put it equivalently, if you want to know the action here, it suffices to know the action here and then use this interpointer. So the upshot is that if we are so lucky as to have an algebra which is almost commutative, then we can answer this question in the sense that we can form intertwiners and get this sort of operation between u tensor v and v tensor u, which is a kind of, what we end up saying is that the category of representations, which we knew as monoidal, is in some sense commutative monoidal. So, and I'll write down now exactly what sense. So I'll need a definition.
Could you show some example of something which is in which there is this interplanning?
Yeah. Well, so trivially, there is this one. But coming up with non-trivial ones is not so easy. Well, I don't know if there are non-trivial.
Of course there are.
Well, but are they non-trivial and non-trivial, or are they trivial and non-trivial?
So, no.
I guess if we're talking about cases of interest to us in the sense of something that will lead us to a gradient variant, I don't know of any.
Well, there is the one constructed out of the Concierge integral.
So you're considering that trivial? I mean, that's not trivial. And, like, that's not easy.
You want trivial? I'm not sure I understood what you mean by trivial, non-trivial.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an easy thing I can put on the board that would show you how this in practice.
Well, there. The simplest examples that I know involve I forgot what it is called. From where we are, the easiest examples are the ones coming from knot theory. There are easier examples, but remember how to write them down.
There are somewhat easy, not and not trivial, but not so easy that I can just write them down quickly in a different context. For example, just with finite groups. There are instructions one can write down without too much effort. So if you want to do extra reading, I could tell you where to find it. But I don't know if there's anything that I could just write down easily.
Yeah, so the most accessible example to us is you haven't yet, I don't think you wrote enough to write it, but it's to take the Lipi algebra B, the universal enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra, R B, well, E to the T12, I mean, the thing that, the T12 that, I mean, and basically a certain construction that comes from chord diagrams and the Concievich integral, the way Zucci described it. But
what I'm writing here is really just a hint of, like, it's by no means of, you really need to study more. Like, this is just the beginning of the big story. So, sorry. So let me write down this definition, and that's probably all I'll be able to do. So. So the appropriate extension here is a graded monoidal category. Is a monoidal category C together with natural isomorphisms. Satisfying the following. And so I will write the following down in a pictorial way, which makes it clearer what's going on, and also in a more sort of diagrammatic way. So pictorially, so the first thing is we have the so-called hexagon relations, and pictorially these correspond to this grading. So if this is UVW, then BUV, W flips these two. And we want this to be equal to the following composition. So firstly, we reassociate. Secondly, we flip these two guys. Thirdly, we reassociate back. Fourthly, we flip these two guys. And then finally, we reassociate back in the other direction. And so we want these two operations to be the same. Topologically, it's clear that we want this. I mean, if we want to put a gray interpretation on this, we clearly want this to be true. But in fact, for purposes of defining a graded monoidal category, we want to impose this. So this is one of the conditions we require. And in a more category theoretic fashion, this is usually written as UVW. So there's different ways of flipping and reassociating this. So in this direction, we could flip the W and the UV. So this corresponds to B, U tensor V, comma W, and we get to W, UV. On this side, we can reassociate and get UVW. So this is with some phi. And then I'll just complete this to a hexagon that implements this picture. So we get WUV UWV, and here we get UWV. And I won't write in the maps, but it's fairly easy to translate into here. Now, obviously, this is why it's called a hexagon. There is also another hexagon, which is the following. Again, UVW, and we want the corresponding identity to hold that matches this. I won't write it out, but there's, in fact, two hexagons which are both required. And then lastly, a more trivial requirement, which is that, secondly, so these are to deal with the units in the monoidal category. So yeah, all of these things exist. So we have the following maps. We can flip 1 and U in U tensor 1. And then via lambda U, we get down to U. And from rho U, we get down to U. And so we want this to be. So that is a graded monoidal category. Lastly, if also B, V, U, circle B, U, V is the identity map, which corresponds to this equation, then C is called, it's no longer called graded monoidal, it's called symmetric monoidal. And it's vector spaces follow this category. So the vector spaces and sets, I guess, follow this category. So where you flip twice, you just end up in the same place. Okay, so that's it. Actually, it's not all I had to say, and I haven't really been able to explore even basic consequences of this definition. But like I said, this is the beginning of a bigger story. So
we should talk between us how to continue this.